Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Aveson, only on LA Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, 8 p.m. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block with myself, Jim Christina, and my co-host, Russ Aveson.
God, they got to get that right.
Well, Ronan, I don't know. You know, hey, Ronan, can we fix that?
Oh, man, you promised me,
you did, too. I think you forgot. It must be the vodka.
Yeah.
We had dinner the other night at one of our sponsors' restaurants. It was pretty good.
Yeah, that was really a nice time. Thanks again for having us all over. That was enjoyable.
Oh, no worries. It was fun.
Everybody sit down and, you know, pretty much you know, grind you on how lousy this whole thing is.
Yeah, pretty much everybody said what they had in their mind, and I said, tough shit, we're going to do it my way.
So. Yes.
Hey, we scored a coup this week, or this last week. September 22nd, everybody mark your calendars down. I gave you the book the other night.
Yes.
We have a guest coming on that is phenomenal. His name is Casey Teffertiller. He wrote the book, The Definitive Story of Wyatt Earp. It's about 9,000 pages with text that you require a magnifying glass to read.
I know. What's the deal with that?
I don't know.
It is. It's like 500-some pages, and it's really tiny.
Small text. But it's a really good book, and once you get into it, you just don't want to quit. So.
I hope that's the case. I haven't gotten into it yet.
Yeah, well, you will.
It frightened me
just
to look at it.
Because it's now just July still.
Okay.
Tuesday, next Thursday, we go to 7 o'clock. Yay! So all of you listening, or those who don't listen, those who pick up the podcast later on.
Those who aren't listening, forget this.
Right. Yes. The August 4th, we move from 8 p.m. to 7 p.m., which is Pacific time. Which would be 9 Central and, of course, 10 o'clock on the East Coast. And mark your calendars. It's 7 o'clock next Thursday evening. Tonight, of course, Bobby Jean is in her Out West concert series at The Rep. And tonight's acts are Jerry Hall and Trickshot. And I guess she said that it was sold out. So there you have it. So Bobby Jean, have a good night. And if you call, you call. If you don't, we'll always think you should have. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, and by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we mention Target Freight every week, and we do that because, of course, they pay our bills. But they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. If we mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time, on time, at the rates you need for your transportation costs. Call today, 1-844-653-7789, and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block. They'll have a little something extra for you. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's kind of cool. And while we're at it, if you're an LTL shipper, which is...
less than a truckload.
There you go, Russ. See, you do learn. You're like an old dog. You are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. You won't be sorry. And I use them all the time, and I'm never sorry. If we have some guests in the studio tonight, if you want to call in and talk to them, the number here is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. And the guests we had tonight, they are actually repeat guests. They raised hell last June when they were here. June 11th, I believe, is the date was that you guys were here.
Yeah.
And Al Heisner and Eric Bringus. No, Al Bringus and Eric.
You having
Heisner.
A little mini stroke over
I
there?
Am.
What's going on?
I'm having a hard time getting my tongue wrapped around Heisner.
There you go.
Eric Heisner and Al Bringus. Eric wrote, of course, last year. He wrote West to Bravo, which has turned out to be quite the seller. And he's written another book, which is it comes out on the 6th of September.
6th of September.
6th of September, and it is, let me get this, I have notes. It is called T.H. Elkman.
Correct.
And again, it's available 9/6/2016, and I really want to read this book because Eric assures me that it is like super duper deluxe delicious. And of course, once again, it is illustrated by our friend sitting in the studio, Mr. Al Bringus. And I looked at some of the illustrations tonight, and they're fantastic.
They look great on the radio.
They look really good on the radio.
That's just my
face.
You guys
look really good on the radio, too. As a matter of fact, my wife told me to tell you guys hi to the twins.
Hi, Jerry.
And you're a great dad. And you have great-looking kids.
Yeah, I blame my wife for that.
Okay. I'm gonna go on from there. All right. Hey, tell us a little bit about... Russ, I'm gonna turn it over to you here in just a second. I want to know a little bit about T.H. Elkman.
Well, T.H. Elkman, he's a kind of a... It's an 1870s traditional Western, and it's kind of inspired by, you know, Tom Horn, a lot of his adventures down in Arizona, and Monty Walsh, which is one of the best Westerns ever written, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. For both movies were great.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a kind of a buddy tale, and it's actually my wife's least favorite book that I wrote. She's like, well, why does he hang out with that other guy? He's such a jerk. And I said, well, that's... Sometimes in the old West, you can't pick your friends, and you end up, you know, sharing a trail with people that aren't as stand-up as Elkman is.
I did that before.
Yeah. You hang out with
kind of like Jim and I with the show.
Yeah,
we won't say who's a shady one.
That's right.
I've hung out on horseback with people I shouldn't have done that before.
Yeah, that your wife doesn't approve of.
No, she did. Actually, no, she doesn't.
You don't always get to choose your sidekick.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Yeah. But back to T.H. Elkman. Great name, incidentally.
Oh, it's his name's Thomas Elkman. As his saddle pal asked him, well, what's H stand for? He said, well, it just kind of holds up the middle.
Okay. And it is truly a Western.
Yeah, it's a traditional Western, mid-1870s.
Cool.
So he's got the right guns and the gear for the period.
Can you give us a little synopsis of the story?
It's... tale of a wandering cowboy. He's basically finds a job taking horses from Colorado Territory up to Montana, and this gambler that he's with, he's a troublemaking kind of guy. Every time they go to a town, it seems like he's, you know, getting his face pushed in and causing all kinds of problems, getting run out of town. And so Elkman, they basically team up and take this group of horses up, and their adventures along the way.
Excellent.
They run into Indians, some rustlers. And it's a good little story.
It's a Western.
It's a Western. Yeah.
There you go. Did you want to mention something about West of Bravo? Because I really liked that book.
Well, this was, you know, some books you read because you have to get through them. No, I mean, really, that's the truth of the matter.
Or your mind starts wandering off as you're reading.
Right, right. And I've approached every book that we've talked about on the show from the standpoint of, okay, well, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to attempt this. We had, I forgot who it was we had in a few weeks ago, and it was a book of poetry. And I am not a fan of poetry.
Okay.
And I told her straight up, I said, you know what? When I got this book, I said, well, okay, here we go. And about halfway through, I started hitting a few of these poems. I said, this is really, you know, they touch me. I mean, there were a few that really got to me. The rest of them is okay. But this book, West of Bravo, which you said is your first novel.
First novel,
I got to tell you, this is nonstop. You start reading and you don't want to put it down, and I didn't. And Al, you mentioned, I think really you hit the nail on the head. It reads like a movie. You've got scenes that are switching back and forth. You're going through, you know, there's two stories happening at the same time. And you talk about a book that allows you to really use your imagination to paint these pictures. It was amazing.
Well, I try to write it kind of like, so I'm a filmmaker, and I try to write it kind of a traditional John Ford type story. And when Al was doing the illustrations, we had the Calvary guide on flag, and we're doing research about it, and we said, well, you know, we can go with the John Ford, which is the cross sabers over the letter, or we can go with the historical, which they didn't actually do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Al, and we're like, well, let's go with John Ford, you know. let's stick with one of the masters.
Stick what's known.
Well, you know, and In talking about the books, I never want to give anything too much away, but the whole idea that grabbed my attention was the fact that here we've got this guy who's really, he's like a half-breed. I mean, he's lived with the Apache.
He's grown up in both worlds.
Right. But he also was with the Cavalry, and so he's known by these guys, but he's really, at the time the book starts out, at the point in time in his life, he is living a nice, quiet life with the Apache. And then there's a series of events that happen that suck him into all of this conflict, and he's really conflicted throughout the story, because you know it's one of those tales of, you know, where does my heart really lie, and it like I said, keeps you going. It keeps you going. And you keep the blood is down to a minimum. There's a lot of, I mean, there's is violence because that's what's going on, but I like the fact that, again, your imagination was left there, and you decide how gruesome it's going to be. Yeah. It wasn't painted for you right there.
Yeah, I didn't have to show off how gruesome it was.
No.
Your mind will do that for you.
And it does at times. It does, but that's just a representation of how sick of a person I am.
He did a short film on West of Bravo.
That I didn't know.
Yes, he actually. I won't call you that.
My lesser known name.
But actually, Al, feel free to use that. Actually, if you go onto YouTube and you type in the name Eric Heisner, many, many, many little films will pop up.
Yeah.
And you've not only finished T.H. Elkman, but you're also working on a new novel now called Wings of the Pirate.
Yeah, it's.
And as we were discussing before the show, as we were rolling up into the 8 o'clock hour, Wings of the Pirate is something like the Tales of the Gold Monkey in the early 80s. But with the pilot of the airplane is not such a nice guy.
He's kind of a loser. He's a World War II vet, and he's kind of retired to the islands, and he's content with his life.
And his airplane is kind of a dilapidated old Grumman Goose. And actually, you found one in Texas, or
That was in the Tucson.
Tucson. And the museum.
Yeah.
The graveyard. Yeah.
Yeah. I said, bring it home. Hell, we can find people to make this thing airworthy.
I want to know those people.
I know. But it's. I mean, you actually did a short on that one too.
Yeah, we did a little scene from the book.
You did, and it was quite interesting. It was actually a lot of fun to watch. I won't give the spoiler away what happened, but it's pretty good.
And there's
it's
a monkey. You know.
Yeah, it's the monkey.
So you got anything with a monkey in it.
Yeah. Anything with, well, you got to see this to understand the monkey. Yeah.
But come on, hasn't every guy wanted to have a monkey?
Well, yeah. But Eric hired a cheap monkey.
Yeah.
Don't say that about Al. Come on.
He was ready to step in if the monkey didn't show up.
And it's the only way also, I get seen.
Your last trip in, you had mentioned a movie that you had made that you discovered you didn't have enough money to rent the horses.
Yeah.
What was the name of that?
That was The Rustlers. That was one of my first films in
Wait, it's The Rustlers and you couldn't get any horses?
Well, that's why it was called The Rustlers. The horses got stolen before we...
Very good.
Yeah,
very
they're
good.
Sitting there and their horses have already been stolen. Now they're trying to figure out how they're going to get to where they're going.
The funny part of that is I did that in film school. It was my first sound film that I did. It was a 5-minute film and it was called The Rustlers. And so that gunfight that we did... which I don't think that one's on YouTube. I'll have to put that one up.
But that, no, there's a longer version on YouTube.
That morphed into the story of T.H. Elkman. Those two characters that walk into town and the rustlers are the key characters in T.H. Elkman, and that was 20 years ago I did that film.
Wow.
And so those characters stuck with me for, you know, 20 years, and I put a whole story together off of that film.
Okay. Well, I want to ask you... because I don't want to get away from West to Bravo quite yet.
Okay.
First of all, you said it's your first novel.
Yep.
So tell me about did you have in mind you wanted to write a novel, or did you have a story that you said, hey, I should take the story and do something with it? Or
you know, if I knew how fun it was to write a novel, I would have done it a long time ago.
Really?
I went to film school, and I'm a trained screenwriter and director, and I've been writing screenplays, and I have, you know, a dozen and a half screenplays, and mm-hmm. I was sitting down, and I have them out there, you know, it's like lines in the water fishing, and I was sitting down to write another one. I thought, geez, writing another one, is that, after a dozen, is it going to make a difference? I need to, and I write every day. I write from 5:30 in the morning till about 8 o'clock, and I thought, you know, I need to do something different. And so I thought, I'm going to try to write a novel. And it took a lot of growing pains, but I figured out how my voice was going to be as far as a storyteller writing a novel. Mm-hmm. And so it took a while to do. And then when I finished it, I was talking to a cowboy friend of mine. And I said, well, I'll see where it goes and, you know, send it out to where I can, and maybe I'll self-publish. And he said, oh, no, you know, I don't know about self-publishing. I can give you a referral to a publisher in New York. So I said, sure. So I sent it to them, and they said, well, we're happy. Your timing's perfect. We're looking for Westerns right now.
Really?
So they snapped it up, and they were just, they've been a Skyhorse Publishing in New York, and they've been a pleasure to work with, and they've been real supportive, and it's kind of, you know, I got my screenplays that are here, and I have other ideas I've wanted to turn into screenplays. I look at those, and I think, well, maybe that'll be a better novel than a screenplay. It could be a lot bigger than 2 hours.
And you can also take one and turn it into another, depending
that
on...
That, too, yeah.
Sure. Now, with this one, since you started writing screenplays, and as I mentioned earlier, and Alad really had said it, that it reads like a movie. So when you did this, did you have storyboards? Did you sketch it out? Did you have how did you go about putting this?
I kind of have a loose outline, just like I do with my screenplays when I plan it out. I kind of know where I want to start. I know who some of my characters are, and I know where I want it to end up, more or less. And then it's kind of the fun of sitting down and writing and discovering who's going to show up and writing your characters into corners and difficult situations, and you want to take a nap and figuring out how they're going to come out of it. So I have a loose outline. I kind of know where the direction I'm heading, and if it goes in another direction, that's fine. But I like to know that, you know, where they're going.
So this was probably running around in your mind a little bit before you actually sat down to put it to paper.
Oh yeah.
But once you decided, okay, I'm going to write this, how long did it take you to actually complete it?
This one I wrote on and off for a while. I was writing screenplays in between. I'd do a little bit of it, and then I'd get frustrated not finding the right voice, and then I'd do something else. With my T.H. Elkman, then now that I kind of got in the swing of things, it took about 3 months for the first draft, and then each revision takes about a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of figuring out, okay, this is how long things take. But it's kind of each project kind of takes a year of your time. It's like doing a film. You got to get the rewrites in it. And that's what, getting it on paper the first time is fun, but the rewrites, when things start really fleshing out, that's where it gets, I enjoy that a lot. Improving on it's, polishing it up and trimming the fat and, bringing different things in it. I really enjoy that.
And now, and also with the illustrations, because when you first mentioned, that you and Al discussed about a lot of this, so I have a feeling that Al's more involved than just putting some sketches into the book.
That's about it.
No.
No, Al. Yeah, Al.
Here's a tissue for you to dry your tears.
He's a Western actor, and he goes to all these festivals with me, and we've been doing a lot of different. He's worked on Friend of the Devil, one of my Western films, and he's been helping me promote the Western genre. And he's, we work pretty tight, and so we talk about these illustrations, and Al, I give him the. I kind of come up with ideas, and Al just delivers better than I could have expected.
How did you guys get together?
We met through a mutual friend that had horses, and so I was casting for my film, and Al's like, "Hey, mention to the other guy that's doing the movie that." And so we end up going riding together. It's hard to find the guys that can ride and be competent.
Yeah.
And so we started riding together. We shot down in Texas. He flew himself out to Texas, got down to Alamo Village, and he's great on set. He's always there, ready to, lend a hand. So we've been pretty tight for a while.
Yeah, we both love the genre so much, and Eric's really underplaying this, but he really is the driving force with the illustrations. Also, he makes my job easy. He brings to me images, and then we discuss the images, and then that's what gets on paper. But I couldn't do it without Eric.
Is this something that you trained for or went to school, or how did you become an artist?
It's pretty much self-taught, really, and then learning from the masters just because I enjoyed their work, Charlie Russell, Remington, and then movies, too, will shape, what I like to put on paper. And then the images that Eric gets, either screen grabs or images from books or magazines, you know, any place you can get an image. And then we tear it apart and make it our own.
Very good.
Yeah, images, I find that when you're doing an image, especially for a book and you're doing it for the book, I mean, it's really got to be important to you, because I don't know. I'm not an artist. I mean, I'm a quasi-writer and a businessman, but I do know that I enjoy sketching and I enjoy art. But when you do an image for a book, such as Westa Bravo or T.H. Oakman or something, it's you have to really get into the character to be able to flesh that image out, don't you think? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking. But it seems like, because I looked at your images for T.H. Oakman, and they seem to be...
Well, he's got the wardrobe down. He's, you know,
he seemed to be right on the money. I mean, even I said that those are my boots, my spurs, my gun belt, my gun. Where the hell are you guys getting that stuff? You know, the only thing you didn't have was my hat, and now you have my hat, so...
It's going to be in the next one.
But, I mean, is that the way that you feel about that, Al? You have to really dig down and get into the character?
You know, yeah.
Or the scene.
It's since we love the genre so much, we both have like a lot of this stuff in our own closets.
Sure.
but getting it right is really important to us. And we'll sometimes zero in on something particular that we want to concentrate on. You know, a lot of the images aren't full images. They're, you know, faded out,
right.
Know, top and bottom frame or something like that. But we'll find something that we, you know, that also relates to somewhere in the story. And just putting our own spin on it, and the fact that we enjoy it so much, I think, really shows off in the writing and in the artwork.
Now, I'll throw this out to both of you because it's actually a question for both of you. As you're writing the book and as you're reading what he's written, mm-hmm. And you're ready to start illustrating, do you, Eric, do you look at passages and think, wow, that would make a good illustration? And you, Al, as you're reading through and he gives you an idea for an illustration, that one passage, and you go, no, I think this would be better.
Yeah, it's happened, yes.
Do you?
Yeah, because I when I'm writing it, I think the illustrations, they relate to the chapter. And I'm thinking, I was like, okay, this would be great to have just a, you know, a kepi hat there or something like that, or a knife, or, you know, a wagon wheel or something like that. And we usually talk through stuff, and we get excited about this stuff. And Al's like, oh, I really like this one. And I can tell the ones that he doesn't want to do because they kind of go to the back of the list. And then I'm like, okay, well, maybe that one's not so good. You know? He doesn't. He's very subtle about it.
They bring
it.
Up the trail.
I just haven't got to that one yet. So it's like, well, let's find one that you do get excited about, because his excitement comes through in there. Because when you look at the ones, you know, he'll send me a message and say, hey, I just finished this one, and you know he's excited about it. So those are the ones we want to have in there, because it does translate.
Well, I have to tell you that one of your images that really struck me in your portfolio that you handed me and I looked at earlier was, because I've done this, I have picketed horses at night, so I mean, and I looked at that image and I saw the dark and the dark shadows of the mountains and the horses picketed. I thought, wow, that is like so on the money. That is just like right there. And that was just like, that brought everything back to me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's fun to do.
It's a challenge. A lot of the stuff I throw his way, he's like, oh, I'm not sure how I'm going to do that.
Yeah, there's
and
a certain
some of them I don't know how he does it, but he comes through.
Okay, I got to ask you about this Winchester rifle, and let me hold the picture up to the mic so you can all see it. But was this actually a rifle, a special edition that did come out? Because I remember talking about the large loop so that you could use it with gloves. It was easier.
Yeah. And they say they had something like that up in Montana. But that's that's a John Wayne thing right there with the big loop.
Uh-huh.
And he twirl cocks it, which is a total Hollywood thing. Because if you don't do it right, as in...
As the guy knocks his teeth out when
exactly
he tries
right.
You know, it's, it comes, you know. But it's just a cool thing that I thought, you know, I really want to take that from John Wayne's character. They're not making John Wayne movies anymore, too bad. But... you know, it's a John Ford, John Wayne type story. Well, just wanted to bring
it had to be a 92 because they were light enough to be able to do it.
Yeah, and with the 73, it's the way the loading, a 92 will grab the shell and bring
73,
it back.
The round will fall off the top.
Yeah, you're going to be dumping them all. They're going to be flipping
besides
over your
besides the fact that it's 20 pounds heavier and it'll hit you in the head and knock you out.
Although I did see a picture for the new Westworld coming out this fall.
Did you?
And the gal's got a 73 Winchester with a big loop on it. So I'm very curious to see what they do with that.
See if she spin cocks that.
Yeah, but they're robots. They can do anything they want.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
It's got a
fantasy
load,
world. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Hey, we're... Were all of the guys, I mean, there's a character in here, Denny. And Denny is just a smart ass. I mean, he's got a big mouth, and he stirs up crap all the time.
Yeah, he's kind of cocky.
Yeah, he is. I mean, and that's saying it mildly. I mean, were these guys always really short on the fuse like that, and they just, you know, always stirring it up?
You know, I take a lot of the characters I have in books from people I've known. I've been doing Old West shows since I was about 7 years old. My dad got into it. He was a college professor, and he had his summers off, and so he started doing Old West shows. And so I tag along with him and start videotaping the shows. And he's been in so many cowboy groups. It's in the 30s, probably. And he's always been kind of the guy that had a real job and kind of an upstanding guy. And he's gone to different groups. And I've seen so many, just the range of characters that each one of these characters I could pull names of real people that, you know, it's like, well, that's... And I think everyone knows people like that, too, whether they're close friends with them or their family or whoever.
It's, right.
There's people like that, and it's, I think that's what kind of rings true for people when they read
it. Kind of like Russ.
Yeah. Yeah, I always create problems.
Yeah. But it's nice to have someone in there that just, you know... Oh. You want him to get...
Well, every story needs a pain in the ass.
He was a young guy, and so you knew that he kind of had that you know, puffed-out chest, you know.
And Billy the Kid was like that. He was kind of a punk, you know.
Yeah.
He hung out with a bunch of...
Gangsta.
Yeah, punk. Yeah.
His whole bunch of guys were punks.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
So... we're going to do a real quick commercial. Actually, we're going to take a little musical interlude here, and then we're going to come back and do a real quick commercial, and we'll be back shortly. And we're back in the studio with Eric Heisner and Al Bringus. And if you're just now joining us, it is, it's almost 8:30. And what has taken you so long? This has been a real fun show. And Sutter's Mill in Simi Valley is one of the finest steakhouses in Ventura County. At Sutter's, you will find casual dining with a touch of elegance and a rustic steakhouse atmosphere. Their well-trained staff strives to provide their guests with a great dining experience. At Sutter's, you will find the finest in steaks and seafood, along with specialty items such as barbecue pork ribs, deep-fried chicken, or shrimp. Sutter's offers a full bar, and we found that out the other night, with special happy hour pricing and never charges a corkage fee. Visit their website at Sutter's4Dining, the number 4, dining.com to make online reservations and view their hours and menus. Their menu also offers a summer special section, which gives you a 20% discount Monday through Thursday from 4 to close. Enjoy. For reservations, call 805-520-4797 or go to www.suttersfordining.com on the web. And again, we had dinner there the other night, and it was special. We had a lot of fun. Had a lot of fun. Okay, back to Eric and Al.
All right.
And you.
Yeah,
Russ?
Me. Oh, yes. Yeah. Avison.
Mr. Avison.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about movies.
All right. Let's
so you're trained as a screenwriter and a
actor,
producer,
director.
Actor, director.
Well, producer is more of a necessity.
Well, that's true. Those are the guys that are always say, you're spending too much money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bringing the elements together. I do a little creative producing.
So tell us about what you've done. What films and...
Well, the Western genre, that's kind of where my passion is.
Right.
So we shot a Friend of the Devil, we shot down in Brackettville, Texas, where John Wayne built his Alamo site. We did that in 2007, I guess it was.
Right.
And we've done that as a TV pilot, and that's got me a lot of work in History Channel stuff, a lot of independent films.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of independent films. Some get finished, some don't get finished. And I've been fortunate enough to bring Al along on a lot of these. And the fun thing about Westerns is having your group of Western buddies do the projects with you.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times I'll get hired or Al get hired and you say, hey, I know someone else that fit in there. So, you know, you get a group of guys out there and when stuff goes bad, it's not that bad when you're out there with your buddies.
Yeah, you can always go pop another
beer. Like, yeah, I was going to say, oh, hell, that didn't work. Let's go drink.
And half the time, the war stories afterwards are more fun than the...
I have to tell you, I just watched Friends of the Devil today for the first time.
Okay.
And my first thought, my first comment when I was watching this movie was, oh, my God, they have horses.
We did get horses.
Yeah, real ones.
And you were riding a gray, Dapple Gray.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a good-looking animal, actually.
Yeah, he was feisty.
Yeah, he looked feisty.
Week after that, he bucked a guy off and broke his hip. So
he was on good behavior.
Yeah,
definitely. For the shoot. But he was a good horse. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a real fun...
Clint Eastwood-style horse, you know.
It was, what, about 23 minutes long?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun to watch. It's Friends with the Devil. Okay. It's on YouTube. Once again, you can go to the YouTube.com and look for Eric.
Just search it.
Eric's channel.
Okay.
Did you watch the making of?
No.
That's pretty entertaining, too.
No, I did not. I did not.
That's where they're drinking a lot.
I did catch your Billy the Kid.
The audition?
Yeah. Yeah, you're just too old for Billy.
Well, I was from some other Black Bart or something. It wasn't for Billy. But.
So,
what do you like writing better, books, screenplays?
Screenplays, I can sit down and I can crank out a screenplay, and I'm comfortable with that. Books is more of a challenge, but it also brings in a lot of my directing. What I get enjoyment from directing, I get from writing a book, because I can tell each character, you know, which way they're looking, when they take a sigh or a grunt, or I'm just really mapping it out, and it's very gratifying to do that. So I really enjoy writing the books, but it's a lot harder. It's a bigger challenge, but
is it more satisfying when you're done?
I think so, because I can't really hand anyone a screenplay unless they're in the business, because it's like handing someone Cliff Notes. And
right.
For the last 20 years, people have said, you write every day. Can I read some of your stuff? Well, not really.
A lot of dialogue.
Yeah. Do you like reading screenplays? So this has been very gratifying that people have known that I've been writing for this long, that to kind of see the kind of stories I like to tell. So.
But you made an interesting comment. You said if you'd known how fun it was to write the novel, you would have done it a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be good at it, though. So it's it's almost kind of putting in that time as a storyteller, as a screenwriter, I think is really
helpful. It prepared you for this.
I think it definitely prepared me. I think I would have, the books I would have written 15, 20 years ago, I might not be as proud of as I think they probably wouldn't stand up as much as the ones I'm doing now.
Do you have anything that you've written that you have definitely either destroyed or locked somewhere away where you don't want anyone else to see it?
I haven't, really. I started writing every day when I was in college.
I have.
Oh, Jim, you do?
I do.
I do rewrites until I like it again.
Yeah, I got some stuff I don't want anybody to see.
But, have you ever taken something that you wrote and you just thought, this is awful, you put it away and you don't look at it for 10 years, but then you pull it out and, like you
there's
said, go to rewrite it or do something with it?
No. Not yet.
Not yet.
Not bad.
No. No, it's not that it's bad. It's just that
so
I'm not ready to write it yet.
Yeah.
A friend of mine wanted me to write a story about the Philippine War. Mm-hmm. And about specifically the massacre in Balangiga, which was on Samar, and it's they wiped out the 9th Infantry. The Moros did, the Philippine natives. And he said, "Wow, that's a great story. Nobody ever told it." And that ain't going to be me either. I just started. I just could not get into it.
You got to be in the right place for it.
Yeah, you really, really, truly do. And jungles and stuff scare the crap out of me now. So, I mean, I'm just now, as I told you, I'm just now writing the Vietnam thing for a friend of mine. And it's taken me this long to be able to sit down and put all that together without panicking.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. But I've stuffed in a drawer now. I don't have any of this stuff. Just that Samar thing. It's on a file someplace. I couldn't even tell you where it is. I think I lost it, actually.
Gotcha.
With the screenplay, you can crank that out in 3 weeks and, revise it over a week or two. And with a book, you're making a much larger commitment, and you're having to keep track of a lot more stuff.
So with a screenplay... And if you can knock it out in 3 weeks, but that doesn't mean that you didn't mentally prepare for the same, because you've got to have the story and get it ready, I would think.
Yeah, you have the same amount of research beforehand that you got to know the story that you want to tell.
But once you sit down to write it, you can really knock it out.
With the screenplay, you're not looking at every sentence, every word saying, this is how I want it to be. When you get to the book and you're like, I want every sentence to read exactly the way I want it. With a screenplay, you kind of get the point across, and the dialogue's important, but not so much the stuff in between.
Well, then your actors are going to give you what you want.
Yeah, they're going to change it all
hopefully,
anyway.
Hopefully, so.
Give them a good outline. Give a story.
I noticed, and I think I mentioned this before when you guys were on, June 11th, I think I said, the dialogue in this book is really well written, and I liked it because it's very easy to read and it's very easy to follow. And that's a gift. For a lot of writers can't do that. And they struggle, and they struggle with words, they struggle with the way people talk. And you didn't seem to have any issues with that.
And that's probably the 20 years of writing screenplays, just practicing that.
Because, people speak differently than you read the spoken word.
Yeah.
Nobody says to, they don't say, I'm going to the store. Right. Everybody says, I'm going to the store.
Correct.
And so, one thing I got called out on a little bit, some people like it, some people don't. But I have little kids, and I've been reading to them over the last few years, and there's so much he said, she said, that I just want to vomit if I couldn't even write he said, she said. So I don't really put in any he said, she said here. So I try to craft it so the reader is following the characters along, and they know
who's speaking
without saying he said this, he said.
There's a lot of that now, that more than there used to be. Mm-hmm. But it's still sometimes writers get ahead of themselves and they get lost in their own dialogue. Yeah. And then you do lose who said what.
Yeah, and that's why you need a good editor because, the editors say, okay, it's unclear who's saying this. And you look at it like, well, it could go either way. So then you need to clarify that.
Sure.
But having a good editor go through with a clear mind. And
what's really bad is if you're, I do a lot of audiobooks because I drive a lot.
Okay.
And when it's the he said, she said thing. Oh my gosh! Because the people who are reading it, they are reading word for word what's on that page,
And you can tell who they change their voices enough. You can tell who's talking.
Oh sure.
And actually, they did do this to audiobook, and the audiobook is really good. It's fun to.
Oh, they did Western Prophet audiobook.
Yeah, it's on audiobook. They sold it to Audible.
Wow.
I think if you join Audible, you can get it for free.
Really?
I belong to Audible, so I do a lot of books on tape. They don't not tape anymore, but
his new book, Wings of the Pirate, is he's doing an experiment with this one, and it's available on
Inkshares.com.
I went on, was it yesterday? I think I went on and bought a copy of it. It's you have to have, was it 500 copies?
250
sold before November 1st.
Independent author, yeah.
Before November 1st. And it's $15 a copy, and it's the electronic copy.
Yeah.
Okay. And I bought one because I want to read this book. I really do. Because Eric, I love the stuff he writes. But if anybody's interested, inkshares.com, go look up Eric Heisner, and it's called Wings of the Pirate.
Okay, but what is the experimental part of this?
Well, it's hybrid publishing. So hybrid publishing is half, it's between Create Space, where it's self-publishing, and the traditional publisher. So they're a startup company. They've been around for about 3 years. And the reason I went to them is they're represented by a United Talent Agency in Hollywood, which is one of the top three talent agencies for directors, writers, and all that. So they have a relationship with them. As a filmmaker, I'd like to sell some of my stories. And so
that would be nice.
Wings of the Pirate, I thought, I was rejected by my traditional publisher with it, because I submitted about 2 months after Western Bravo came out, and they said, well, you just don't have a sales history yet, so we'll pass on it. And so I had it sitting around. Al had finished about half the illustrations already, and then I wrote another Western. The publisher picked that one up, and then I read in the trades about Inkshares, and I thought, this is kind of a neat thing. And what it feels like, it's kind of like having an online table, like at a festival, and people come, I've met a lot of great authors, learned a lot of great stuff. And so people basically can pre-order the book, which is, I've had one of my Cowboys buddies tell me, it's like, it's pre-selling a book that's not done yet. It's kind of like selling an empty box of donuts. Like, well, if it was easy,
actually,
everyone would
do it. Actually, it
kind of is. But they're really good.
Well, it's kind of like crowdfunding then, isn't it?
It is a mix between crowdfunding and self-publishing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hit the, basically, at the $250, they'll do a light edit of your work, and they'll publish it. They'll get in Ingram Books and distribute it to Amazon and all bookstores. And then at $750, they'll do the whole marketing plan with the readings and book signings and stuff like that.
Mm.
So basically, with the pre-orders, offset the cost of printing. So you're kind of at $250, you're splitting, you know, the cost of printing, what it cost to print a book.
Sure.
And what I chose to do is hardcover, which makes it even tougher because most of the authors are doing ebook and paperback, which is a $10 and then $20 for the paperback. I'm doing hardcover, which bumps the ebook up a little bit to help offset the cost of the hardcover, and the hardcover's $30. But with my traditional publisher, they've done such a great job with my hardcover novels. I want to stick with, you know, when people find me on Amazon, I want that quality to stay the same. You know, Al's illustrations are in there.
Mm-hmm.
I want people that enjoy Western Bravo or Elkman coming out in September to pick up Wings of the Pirate and say, okay, you know, this is the same quality, because no one cares who prints the book, but they look at the quality there. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to stay consistent with that. But it's been doing pretty well, and a lot of people have bought it because it was a hardcover. And Inkshares, they do a great job in the online marketing part of it, and it's definitely worth logging on. And you can put in a search engine the type of genre books you like, and there's a lot of sci-fi, a lot of fantasy stuff. There's, you know, they have their catalog is growing exponentially all the time.
Well, tell me now, I know with the music industry, good things and bad things have come out of internet. One is, I mean, you can, instead of buying an album, which a lot of people had to do, now you can just go buy one song.
Yeah.
Okay. And also pirating is much easier. Mm. But on the other hand, a lot of unknown bands and artists can get out there and people get a chance to hear them where possibly they never would before.
Yeah.
How is this affecting your industry?
I think with the publishing industry, it actually has helped book sales. The ebook, it's done wonders. I think it saved the publishing business. And now that hybrid publishing, and then, you know, with CreateSpace and the self-publishing, you know, now people can get their stuff out there. And the thing that people need to remember, self-published books aren't bad, but it's, you need to do the same things that the traditional publisher was doing. You have to have editors in there. You have to have cover designers. You have to have all those elements. That does cost money, unless you have friends that are professionals that can do it and will cut you a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So to do it right, it still costs a lot of money, but you can get it out there and do a professional just as good as a traditional. And the nice thing about this hybrid publishing is that they have I think they probably have a staff of less than 20 people, but they have the staff that can do this, and they're hedging their bets by, if this book has a following, then it has a higher chance of success. It kind of gives it a trial period where it can prove itself, and they can adjust their marketing accordingly.
Sure. So you get the opportunity.
Yeah.
Otherwise you might not.
And it's exciting, but it's also, you get updates from authors that, you know, they just don't make it, and it's tough, and they have to regroup and try something else, or they, you know, most of them, hopefully they learn, it's a learning experience that, okay, this wasn't the right venue for this book, or, you know, I need to build my social network more to,
mm-hmm.
It's tough selling books anywhere, and it's...
Can you make money doing it? I mean, I know there's the big authors that you see that definitely are making money, and they're putting out a bestseller every year. You know, like we were talking about Lee Childs in the Jack Reacher series. I mean, he sits down and starts writing in September and finishes in June. In September, he starts a new one. He's got 17 or 18 books out.
Yeah.
But can somebody who is not as well-known still make some money doing this?
I think eventually you can. You've written dozens of books, Jim. So,
yeah,
you know,
you can. I mean,
you know,
it's
the second one sells the first one and then keeps going from there.
It's shameless self-promotion.
Yeah,
which you're really good at, incidentally.
But that's what it's all about.
But that's what it takes. That's exactly what it takes. You have to self-promote, because publisher houses are going to do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
When you
don't do that anymore.
Well, when you independently publish, and we prefer to use that phrase, it's all on you. So that's why we do go to these book things, and we do go to these writers' conferences, and we do go to these shows, and we, you know, and people get, your name gets out there, and mm-hmm. they look and they say, "Oh, you're a guy that wrote that," you know. And
the thing with Inkshares is they're, I think it's 50% for hardcover and 70% to the author for ebook. Oh. With my traditional publisher, it's like 10%.
Right.
But you know, they have a bigger reach. But Inkshares, you know, I think they have a pretty fair reach, and they're growing. So I think it's it's a good experiment.
There's just so much available now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, the explosion of independently published books has just gone through the roof.
Yeah, which makes it harder also to cut through all the noise.
Exactly, exactly. But then the publishing houses are turning down 90% of the authors that submit. You know, they're going to publish to James Patterson's and John Grisham's. And
whatever fits in their business
exactly.
model.
Exactly. And if you're not in their business model, your book comes right back to you. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the guy that was in our show last week, he actually had a handwritten rejection letter from a publisher.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, virtually a handwritten rejection letter from a publisher.
The computers were down, I guess.
He was really proud of it. He was carrying it around with him. Well,
publisher so was time, hated it so vehemently. He had to write, this sucks.
He really liked it, except he said it was too long and there was something else. That's the one that was like just 17 volumes. But, everybody gets rejection letters.
Yeah, and it's tough. And I was fortunate that with Western Bravo, that Skyhorse was looking for Westerns.
Timing was right.
For a first-time author, I was very fortunate.
Yeah, you were, actually. Now, you don't have an agent. You're your own agent.
Yeah.
That's going the way of the future now, too, is people getting away from agents.
Yeah.
We have to get more streamlined, again, because the revenue stream is
not
as big.
The revenue stream is shrinking. Yeah. So, I mean, in order to make your money, you have to stop paying all these extra people, and agents are extra people.
I wanted to ask about Al, because Al, you mentioned you're an actor also.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about, you haven't had this chance to say much.
Yeah, Al, you've been really quiet over there.
And Eric put his gun down. So
Eric's kind of, he can hold the floor for a while.
Yeah.
I do want to answer one of the questions you asked Eric a little while ago about what do you like better, writing novels or screenplays. I'm a fan of his novels because my artwork doesn't make it in his screenplays.
It just doesn't hold up. Maybe the opening credits.
Yeah, right.
Fortunately, though, his screenplays, though, does get me some of my acting work. And, that's really been a big plus for me. We've been able to work in both fields together, and I would say that most of my other film work, if it's not from Eric's scripts, he's still getting me work through other people that he knows. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely pluses on both sides of the coin.
But I will have to say, having seen you in a couple of Eric's films, and you never look the same. You can see your name in the credits, but it's really hard to pick you out of the crowd. It really is hard to figure out which one is Al Brigus.
That's something that we're real proud of. We don't want to look like the same guy in the
company.
You got to. They got to make sure they look different. Otherwise, geez, this guy doesn't have any other friends.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes left, Al and Eric. Why don't you tell us where you're going to be? And how to get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at www.leandogproductions.com.
There you go.
Yeah, and there's merchandise besides books on there. We do bandanas, Eric's films, hats, all kinds of fun stuff on that website.
Are these a couple hats that you guys have?
Actually, Al shaped up his hat. I shaped up mine. I get a lot of side jobs shaping up hats to look like movie hats. I do a lot of John Wayne hats and things like that. And that's... I probably make more money from that than selling books.
Wow.
And you're on Facebook. You're on Facebook.
Right, we're both on Facebook.
Okay. Yeah. And email addresses?
You can reach me at...
It's that panicked look now.
What's thinking, my email address?
Which one can I ignore?
You can reach me at albringus.com.
Al_Bringus.
Can be reached at leandogs@gmail.com.
Okay. And Al?
Al_Bringus@yahoo.com.
There you go. Okay. Guys, thanks for coming in and sharing your wonderful adventures with us.
Always
for
having us.
Hey, let me know when you're going to be out close enough, and I'd like to come out and hang out by your booth.
Sounds good.
Because I'll run everybody away and hand them business cards.
Leave a pile on the table.
Hey, thanks for coming in again, really, truly. And next week, on our first 7 o'clock hour, we have Gerald Dooley. Who is, has written a book that is, I'm right in the middle of reading right now. It's about the slave trade and slave family that grew up, and it goes from 1769, I believe, up to modern times. It's a pretty good read right now, so it's, I think I'm about halfway through it. But his name was Gerald Dooley. I believe he writes under the... I'm not even going to try that one. I don't remember exactly. Anyway, he writes over under a nom de plume. Russ, thanks for coming in.
Thank you again.
It's always a pleasure.
Yes.
And we'll see you again on the fourth Thursday of next month.
Yes, at 7 o'clock.
Whatever day that is.
Hopefully I'll get through that huge book about Wyatt Earp.
Well, that's the following month, so you still have 2 months to go.
Oh, yeah, 2 months. Okay.
Yeah. And that's it for the Writer's Block for tonight. Thank you all for joining us. And if you have been listening, thank you again. And if you listen to podcasts, thank you again. Have yourselves a wonderful evening. We'll be with you next Thursday at 7 p.m.